You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And being the second Wednesday of the month, I have with me someone from Hutchison Legal. We've got Con. Welcome, Con.
G'day, Alan. Good to be back. It's been a while.
I was going to say, I haven't seen you for a while, so it's good to catch up. Now, what we wanted to talk about, we've had a number of questions on this, is yellow lights. Now, the government last year changed the rules, or they added orange lights to what used to be, well, in the early days, the red were the fire engines, blue for the police, and I think you said magenta for...
Well, Vic Roads. Vic Roads, I think, have got magenta, or also some people would call it purple.
But the government decided to add the orange lights with it. Now, I suspect governments being governments, I'm not picking on any government here, it's not political, that they've just added orange to it. Now, we've got a number of people over the last couple of months have contacted me over these. First of all, I suspect that at least 60% of the public haven't taken any notice of it, because you've only got to be on a freeway and go past these and people don't even slow down. In fact, that happened when I was going home last week. But there were some really, well, a concern, right. So you've seen these big trucks that when they block a lane, they've got that thing at the back that drops down and they've got their flashy orange lights. Now, so technically when you approach that truck, it's a 40 speed limit, right? Mm. But on the back, and I saw one last week, it's 60.
Mm.
So what overrules, because as someone said to me, and we're not having out the police either, the police are there to enforce the road rule. So that truck is saying you can travel at 60 because the sign's at the back of him, not at the front, and the truck is flashing his lights at 40. So who's right?
Well, I think the law is right, and then it's about enforcement of the law. Yep. If it seems it's like a law that they will enforce in a common sense manner. So it's all about context. Context is important in this. But the law is, if you see lights, flashing lights, yep, whether they are red, blue, magenta, as we said, purple, or yellow or orange,
yep,
anything like that, when you see flashing lights, you've got to slow down to 40 kilometres an hour.
Even though the truck's got on the back 60.
Yeah. Well, now, what kind of truck are we talking about, right? So if it's a tow truck, slow down.
Yeah,
well, if it's a support vehicle, like you'll see those on the toll roads, there'll be a support vehicle, flashing lights, going to help somebody that's broken down.
Yep.
You've got to slow down.
Yep.
If that vehicle's moving along at 10 kilometres an hour, you've got to slow down to 40. If it's stopped, you've got to slow down to 40. Every lane of traffic that is passing,
so
that
if
flashing light,
East Link, where there's three lanes, there's
every lane has to slow down. Every lane,
right?
Not just the left lane.
Yeah.
All three lanes must slow down. Now, of course, in a common sense manner, no one wants people going from 100 and slamming the brakes onto 40.
Yep.
The idea is that you slow down progressively.
Yep.
And then once you've cleared the scene of the flashing lights, you then speed up again.
So if that truck has got this big one where it's got the 60 speed limit on the back, you should come to 40, and as soon as you go past him, you can go back to 60.
Yeah.
I mean, I suspect, to be honest, the police are probably unlikely to enforce the 40. I don't know how you'd go there, because one says 60 and the other one says 40.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a very lucky circumstance, or unlucky for you if you could, that they actually see you doing it in the wrong way, or they've set up a test. I won't call it a trap, but they'll set up something and they'll put a camera on it and monitor how people go.
Yep.
But generally speaking, they'll be hoping that people just comply. But that's important to know, that it's every kind of yellow, and it's every lane.
Yeah.
And if it's not a large road, so if it's let's say it's only if it's two lanes in each direction, unless there is a median strip.
Well, let's talk coming into Healesville. There's no medium strip. It's just one lane each way.
Yeah. So if there's flashing lights on the left lane, both lanes, both sides of the road have to slow down to 40. Both sides of the road in both directions. If so you've got one lane in each,
realise that
one lane in each direction, two lanes in each direction, until there's a median strip that's either marked. You know, sometimes it's painted on.
Yep.
It's sometimes it's coloured.
Yep.
Sometimes it's grass. Unless there's a median strip clearly marked, both sides of the road in both directions have to slow down to 40. But if there's a median strip, the other side of the road doesn't have to slow down at all.
Right. Now, we've had this a couple of times popped up, and it actually happened to, I've seen it about three times in the last week. I understand, so the tow truck, well, no, we won't ever go at towies, because actually I saw one of these guys that goes around washing the bus stops.
Mm.
So they put their flashing lights on, it's their work site. But then they take off and they don't turn their lights off.
Mm.
So they're heading down the freeway at, well, where I saw it was 60 Ks. So what happens then, when he comes up to you, are you supposed to see him in the rear vision drop to 40, or is this just an I mean, he shouldn't be driving with them on.
Well, they shouldn't be driving. Well, again, it's only if they're below 10 kilometres an hour.
Right.
So if they're driving with flashing lights but below 10 kilometres, you've got to just slow to 40.
Right.
But if they're hurtling along at 60 or 70...
Yeah, well, I thought it was 60.
Yeah, and you don't have to slow down. That's my understanding of the law there.
Yep.
Is that it's only when they are either stopped or travelling less than 10 kilometres an hour, then you must slow to 40 as you pass them. Because it's all about passing them. If they're going 60 and you're following behind at 60, you don't have to slow down at 40 because they're going ahead of you, right? So,
I was wondering if, and the question from the listener was, if I see them in the rear vision mirror coming upon me at 60 or 80, do I have to start to drop the 40, even though he's going to shoot past me at 60 or 80?
No. That's not where these come in. And that's to do with sirens. So if something's coming up from behind you with sirens and flashing lights, then you've got to get out of the way safely.
I mean, you're mainly talking fire brigade, police, and ambulance.
They're the usual ones. But yes, but it's sirens. So that's defined as sirens. So yes, if a vehicle's coming with sirens, it might not be those three. It could be something else. But if it's sirens and flashing lights, you've got to give way carefully so that they can get past. Usually the traffic either all goes left or all goes right to let them through.
Well,
you know,
some dumb bum in the middle of the lane.
Yeah, and you stop in the middle of an intersection, whatever, just to make it safe for that vehicle to get to where they have to go with their sirens on.
Got to take a break, and we're going to come back with more. We'll get off the flashing lights. We want to talk about some AI stuff.
With your windows down, looking for a bad romance. Mama always told me to follow my heart, keep my cards close to my chest. Should have seen you coming right from the start. Now we all know how this ends. Left a life of rules and never crossed no lines. When it comes to you, I do it all the time. Shake my bones and hold my breath. Gonna breathe you in like a cigarette. You're bad for me, but it sure feels good at the time. Just one taste is all it takes. You draw me in until I nearly break. I make the same mistakes. It's the only way I know to survive. Oh, go on and lock me up, cause you're one hell of a crime. Got me hypnotized, like I'm losing my mind. Like you cut my brakes on the interstate, flying through every light. And like a last shot of whiskey on a Friday night that I know I'm gonna regret. You got me moonshine blind, I wouldn't hear rewind. I loved every second of it. Lived a life of rules, never crossed no lines. But when it comes, it's the only way I know to survive. Oh, go
Listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Con from Hutchinson Legal. Con, a couple of years ago, I don't know whether it was you or one of your partners I was talking to, told me about a lawyer that got caught out in America. He put together, and because AI apparently creates precedents because AI is never wrong. And he got caught out and the judge said, well, it didn't exist, the case that he quoted. And you think there might be, well, is there one in Australia? Has that happened?
Yes. So the case you're referring to, we all thought that's pretty funny, you know, an experienced 30-year lawyer having to do an affidavit confessing to his use of AI and how it was all wrong, making up cases. And we thought that won't happen in Australia. Surely an Australian lawyer wouldn't do
that silly.
Well, it happened. It has happened.
It has happened.
And it's had very serious consequences for that practitioner.
Was it in Melbourne or in Australia?
It was Victoria. I'm not exactly sure which suburb, but it was in Victoria. No. So, yes, the Victorian Legal Services Board ran a case saying that this lawyer had submitted, in, I believe it was a family law case, submitted what's called a list of authorities, like cases, and extracted sections of those cases saying this applies to my client's case.
Yep.
And the results were that those cases either didn't exist or the extraction, the quotes extracted didn't exist, and the lawyer just didn't check. The lawyer just submitted it as if it was all correct, and it was not. But so it wasn't just misleading the court and making false, you know, wrong submissions to the court, but then the regulator of lawyers, Legal Services Board, have jumped on it because it got reported to them, and so this lawyer ran their own business. They lost their principal practicing certificate. They lost their right to hold trust money. They can only be an employee in a law firm working for someone else, and a reprimand and fine, you know, paying the costs of the Legal Services Board. So serious consequences.
Yeah. Because AI, instead, like it didn't go looking for a case. It created its own cases, did it?
Yeah, it what they call hallucinates. It's sort of like when it's trying to be like a human, and you know when you're in a conversation, sometimes people just make stuff up.
Yep.
Because they don't want to say I don't know. They don't want to say empty silence. So if you ask an AI a question, it's not going to say
I wouldn't
have a clue. It's not going to give you that response. So it's going to try and make things up, and it. I don't know how where it finds it, but it grabs this stuff and makes it up. It really makes it up, and so it's so dangerous.
Yeah.
Now all the courts pretty much are coming up with what's called practice notes or practice statements as to lawyers having to reveal when they use AI in documents that they submit in court.
Yeah.
Now the tricky part of that is AI is infiltrating. I don't know where the buzz is. AI is infiltrating everything. So even now, when you use something, a Google search or some other kind of online search, it's using AI in the results it's giving you. It's automatically popping up an AI response. So you might not know you're using AI, but you're using AI. So it's a bit of tricky to try and explain to the court every time you've used AI. So that's something we need to wrestle with. But it's very serious, and the sources always need to be checked.
I was just going to say that. So that means that even if you wanted to use AI, then if Con puts a brief together for the court, and it comes back with whatever. You really need to check every quote that it's put in there, don't you?
Yeah, you need to go to the official source of those cases and find those quotes yourself. So, AI can help you shortcut where to look. But something that's important is filtering your results as well. So what's important is you ask the AI the question.
Yep.
You see the summary it gives, but it also should tell you where it picked up that information, because sometimes it'll pick up some other paper or some other law firm website.
Right.
But that law firm might have done an article 5 years ago, and that case might be out of date. The article was correct when it was published, but 5 years later that's not correct. Right. But the AI doesn't know the difference.
So how does that save... We'll talk about Con now.
Yes.
Con's going to put something to the courts.
Yes.
So how does AI save your time? Because, first of all, it produces it, but then you've got to recheck everything else. So does it save you any time?
Well, it may save you time. It may pick up some correct information.
Right.
But you've got to verify it. So if it tells you there's a case and gives you a case citation, you should actually type in the citation and prove to yourself that that case exists. If it gives you a quote from a case, it should tell you the paragraph number in the judgment that it's referring to. You should go and find the judgment and check it. Just double check that it is actually accurately copying that extract.
So the courts are now going to keep an eye on the cons of this world, aren't they?
All lawyers.
What's what I mean, the cons of this world, all lawyers, to make sure that you're not putting in. Because you really, it's almost a, you're lying to the court almost, aren't you?
You are misleading the court. That's right. And because you're meant to be saying to the court that these submissions that you're making have a proper legal basis.
Yep.
If you're submitting something the AI has generated and you haven't checked it, you are effectively, misleading the court. Cool. And that's a breach of your professional obligations.
Yeah.
So now what's fascinating, though, AI is, though, enabling self-represented people to come up with really long documents that they're submitting. And I read an article recently about the Fair Work Commission. Yeah. They are being flooded with claims made by self-represented claimants.
Yep.
Full of AI submissions, full of AI, like the statement of claim.
And so they could all be wrong too.
Could be wrong, could be partly right and partly wrong. It's pages and pages. Like instead of, doing a one-page summary, they're submitting 8 to 10 pages because the AI spat it all out.
So this guy that's got caught here in Australia and also the American one are in a lot of trouble, and this one you just said has lost his license to practice as a sole practitioner as a practitioner.
As a principal, yes. As a principal. Can work as an employee.
So what can the courts do to say, I did it? Say I just said, I've got this court. Now, they can hold responsible by, they can take away your principal. What would they do to me? Would it be contempt of court?
Not necessarily. They'll just say your submissions are wrong. They'll just reject them. Now, if they're really bad, they might dismiss your case altogether because it's just complete. If the AI is quoting American law and you're running something in Australia, it's not going to fly. And we won't get onto the sovereign citizen stuff either.
Yep. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And I'm talking to Con from Hutchison Legal. Con, family law, it's always a tricky sort of thing, and particularly with the children and, you know, who gets what. But you were saying there's something to do with pets now. They're not chattels, they're not anything. They're in their own right, are they?
Yeah, so last year the family law was amended, making some known principles a lot clearer in the legislation. But I just thought something worth noting in one of the changes is what's defined as companion animals. So it's your pets.
So companion animal, let me just clarify that. It's not like a seeing eye dog or something like that.
It could be that too. I mean, it's just that in the past the animals, the pets were treated as like the furniture, like the couch. Who gets the couch?
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Yep.
So they were just a thing.
Yep.
And some people want to treat them like the children. Yep. And argue for like joint custody, but the law is very clear. No, they're not going to give joint custody on a pet, on an animal.
Oh, they're not. Yeah.
No, but there are different considerations. So they're sort of in a separate category of their own now, in family law. So I just thought that was worth noting.
So what sorts of things, Con, does the court take into account?
I haven't looked it up exactly. I have to confess, I don't know exactly. But they're going to be looking at who needs the animal more. Because there's a lot of people that treat their pets, their animals,
absolutely,
a lot better than some humans, even their own children sometimes, I've got to say.
I wouldn't say we do that, but our dog's part of our family.
Part of the family, exactly, yeah. Right. And I think that's why this category, having special considerations for that. But there has to be, it can only go with one. They're not going to share the animal. Unfortunately, I have heard of matters sort of on the dark side of pets and ownership. It's where pets are sort of used to manipulate or coerce partners.
Are they?
Sometimes a partner is afraid to leave the relationship because they're worried about leaving the pet behind and what the other partner will do to the pet if they're not around. So that can be, as I say, it is on the dark side of animal ownership.
But there's some dark people out there.
And there's some dark people. So in the area of sometimes family law and intervention orders, they're used as they're in completely separate courts, but they're used as part of this manipulation, coercion or punishment for somebody, you know. So that's a pretty sad side of
But
that's why, pets are close to people.
Yep.
People really love their pets. So you need to get some specific advice about that if you're concerned.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a bit hard because obviously with children, the judge in the family court can often ask children, you know, who do you want to be with, mum and dad and all that. But with a pet, you can't. And pets don't discriminate. I mean, they'll go to mum or dad, won't they?
Mm. Yes, and well,
in the same way.
Yeah, I don't think the court's going to be setting up some test where, you know, the two people claiming ownership and custody say come to them and then they see which one it goes to. I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
That's right. You can't ask the pet.
I'm going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back with more. We're going to send Con away with a question to bring us back next month.
Best of friends, insisting that the world keep turning on.
good. You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Con, we've had a question that's come in, and it's regarding bail, but it's not the young people's bail. We're sick of doing that. I mean, we've done it to death that many times over the last 12 months, and we're yet to see whether it's whether this new lot of bail is going to work or not. All right, so a person's committed a major crime like murder.
Mm.
They go to court and they're found guilty. They appeal, and the judge throws out the actual case itself and says and orders a retrial for whatever reasons the judge does. So the person says, well, I'm still technically innocent now because that case has been put out. I'm not saying you're innocent, but you're technically the innocent. So they appeal and the judge says, no, you're not going to come out on bail because of what's happened. Can that person who was convicted, how many times can they have a go at bail? Is it only just that once? We don't want an answer now. Or is it other time? Like, can they keep coming back for two or three times? Because I know on the other sorts of bail, they seem to be getting it all the time. So could you have a look at that for us for next month?
Sure. Okay, that's tricky. But, yep. I'll try and get you some answers.
Beauty. Now, you wanted to talk about social media.
Social media, yes. Well, just as usual, when well-intentioned lawmakers, governments bring something in, there's some other unintended consequences that they weren't thinking about at the time. So back on the 10th of December last year, the social media ban for teenagers, 16 or under 16s, came in.
Yep.
And the laws, though, weren't targeted at the teenager. They're not going to prosecute a teenager.
Yep.
They're not targeted at the parents for letting a teenager access websites with harmful material. It's targeted at the website owners, the media companies the various service providers, internet. Yep. So, and there's huge fines.
Yep.
So one of the unintended consequences of the trying to get the teenagers off is that these companies, these website owners, have to show that they've been taking steps.
Yep.
And they were given a bit of a grace period for 3 months, which finished yesterday, the 10th of March.
Oh, did it? Yep.
So now many foreign websites have decided that it's just all too hard because Australia is one of the first countries, or the first country, to bring this kind of thing in, and other countries want to sort of see how it goes and copy it.
Yeah. Or refine it, or chuck it out.
But because of the risk of the huge fines, if they don't verify age to make sure that 16-year-old or under 16s aren't on there, they've pretty much just put age verification for everyone. So a website for you, Alan, a website you might have gone to in the past. I mean, I don't know. I don't think you're a gambler, but let's say it's a gambling website.
Yep.
In the past, you could access it no problem.
Yep.
Now it might have a page that says, you have to verify your age. Yep. Now, the problem there is it might ask you, take a photo of yourself. Well, you're giving away your facial profile. You know how some phones unlock with a face image?
Yep.
Well, giving a nice image to some foreign website owner of your face
isn't what you want.
Maybe not a good idea. They might say to you, upload a copy of your passport. Once you do that, where is that copy?
And they've got all your details.
Is it in Australia? That's right. They've got your photo, a signature, date of birth, all a passport number. So they can then do identity theft on you, use that. So there may be people coming across, as I say, yesterday, today, from now on, trying to access websites in Australia. You may be faced with this age verification, and I would say be very, very wary. Unless you know and trust that website, I would not be giving them any of this data. I wouldn't be giving them a photo of your passport, of your face, anything like that at all. So you need to be very, very careful about how you would prove your age.
Now, I'm going to throw a question at you because I know absolutely nothing whatsoever about this. When I hear talk of the dark web. Now, I don't know how you find it or anything about it. I don't want to know about it. Is that dark web subject to the same rules and regulations as say, Google and those?
Well, it should be, but it's very, very difficult to trace who's ultimately behind the websites, who's actually running them. So, but look, the authorities, I know, you know, the FBI, there was a famous dark website called Silk Road many, many years ago. Uh-huh. And the FBI were able to trace it and shut it down. But these sites, the dark web, they're usually using cryptocurrencies. And again, that's another layer of, you know, financial transactions not going through banks,
right?
With cryptocurrencies, with Bitcoin, you might have heard of, or but there's a plethora of cryptocurrencies which aren't going through banking systems, aren't going through international.
So, and that's on the dark web.
People on the dark web, they prefer to keep their anonymity as much as possible.
Well, so. I guess that's probably one of the reasons that they're on the dark web. I don't understand the dark web, whether it's just like Facebook, but it's just criminal stuff and dirty stuff. I don't quite understand, and it's usually,
I'm no expert, that's for sure. But yes, they're usually using a lot of encryption and as I say, a lot of tools, VPN changing so that you can't track which country are you connecting from. Is it Australia? Yeah. Is it the Philippines? Is it who knows where? So there's all sorts of tools that these people use, but us everyday people just using the internet, we would know nothing about.
Well, I don't know anything about it, to be honest. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and talk to more right through till 2 o'clock. 2 o'clock, the news and weather, and then I'll have James in to talk about the mental health first aid group that he runs.
On board, we gonna ride till there ain't no more to go. Taking it slow, and Lord, don't you know, I'll have me a time with a poor man's lady. Hitching on a twilight train, ain't nothing here that I care to take along. Maybe a song, sing when I want. Don't need to say please to no man for a happy tune. Oh, I love my rosy child. You got the way to make me happy. You and me, we go in style. Crackling rose, you're a store-bought woman, but you make me sing like a guitar humming. So hang on, girl, our song keeps running on. Play it now, play it now, play it now. My baby, crackling rose and make me smile. Girl, if it lasts for an hour, well, that's alright, 'cause we got all night to set the world right. Find us a dream that don't ask no questions, yeah. Oh, I love my rosy child. You got the way to make me happy. You and me, we go in style. Cracklin' rose, your store-bought woman, but you make me sing like a guitar humming. So hang on to me, girl, our song keeps running. Play it now, play it now, my baby. Cracking those and make me a smile. Girl, if it lasts for an hour, well, that's alright, 'cause we got all night to set the world right. Find us a dream that don't ask no questions.
You're
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Con, you want to talk about something that's a bit topical at the moment and may or may not happen, depending on the law.
Yes, look, it's been announced that state government is wanting to bring in laws that will allow employees that work for businesses with 15 or more employees to have the right to work up to 2 days a week from home. But that's only if it's the kind of job you can do from home.
I was going to ask you, so how would, say, a police officer or some of those, that they can't? So that
it depends on what their duties are, because some people are behind desks in the police force and some are on the road.
Yep.
So, again, I think an easy way to ask the question might be, did you do your job from home during the pandemic? Because if you if you did, I know a lot of lawyers did. We ran our whole firm from home for months on end.
Because I talked to you from your home.
So, you know, in those contexts, if you can work from home. Now, obviously, the waiter at the cafe can't work from home.
Yep.
So it doesn't apply to them. But it applies if you can do your work from home. If the choice will be taken away from the employer, though, how to run their business. If they want people in the office full-time, the employees will have the right regardless of what the business owner wants. So this is meant to come in. These laws haven't been passed yet, and it's going to go – they're going to try and get it through so that it starts on the 1st of September, which just happens to be before an election in November.
I'm not
but
touching
we're
that.
Not going to talk about politics.
That's one thing I don't want to – but –
And for business, small businesses under 15 employees, that's going to come in if these laws pass and things keep going the way they are. Then that's going to kick in from July next year for under 15.
So if you've only got two or three employees,
even then, if you've only got two or three, if they can do their work from home, they'll have the right to. What I'd be suggesting to if these laws comes through, and businesses should review who's on their books as employees, because it might be headcount, you know. I can think of a situation where somebody's got a casual cleaner on their books as an employee.
Yeah.
Now, if it's headcount, it doesn't matter how many hours they work, but they're going to be contributing to your 15 headcount.
You might want
to have a contract with them as an independent contractor rather than as an employee casual on your books. Because if you're on this edge of 15, you're really going to want to have a close look as to whether you want these laws to apply to you or not.
But then after next year, if it comes in, then it won't matter whether you've got three or...
That's right. That's right. And so it's only going to slightly delay it from 1st of September until 1 July next year for the smaller businesses. But this is, you know, going to have a real impact, and people are going to have to be careful how they plan their way around this. Because I know people love to be at the office with their colleagues, going out for coffee or going out for lunch together, a water cooler conversation, as they call it. There's a lot that goes on.
I used to find that at work, and it also would help the boss got to know you a bit better too.
Oh, of course, of course.
You know, you'd be standing there having a or you'd go down and make a coffee and he'd come down and you'd talk about stuff. And you got to know a bit about him personally and he got to know a bit about you.
Yeah.
Whereas working from home is very impersonal. I'm not saying it shouldn't happen. I don't want to get in the politics of it.
Oh, look, and it can be appropriate. I mean, there were people working from home before the pandemic. There was always reasons why it was a good idea.
Yep.
But there's a big difference as well between working from home for 2 or 3 months in a row or just working from home 1 or 2 days a week. Very different scenarios as to whether that's a good idea or a bad idea.
Yep.
But you know, mentoring somebody, a younger employee, training them on the job, you'd want them in the office all the time, I would have thought, because you want to overhear them on the phone if you're in the professional services. Yep. You want to have them accessible to you for as part of their training and mentoring. Yeah. So having
that won't be exempt, will it?
There won't be any of that. It'll just be you've got the right to work from home 2 days a week if your job is capable of being done from home 2 days a week. So there's going to be arguments about that.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. So
Con, we've got another couple of minutes. You got something else you want to impart with the listeners?
Oh, okay. On the topic of, I said that these websites are going to be asking you for a lot more information and you should be careful about giving it. From the 1st of July this year, I'll just grab the typical ones, your real estate agents, your lawyers, your accountants, your conveyancers are going to start asking their clients a lot more questions about the source of their funds for completing transactions. This is all part of what's called anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism financing, which, you know, everyday people like us, we're not involved in that stuff.
No.
But it's been shown that lawyers, accountants, real estate agents, they're involved in...
You're going to write all lawyers off here.
the rest of the world, most of the rest of the world's already implemented it for those services, but Australia's been lagging behind, and this is part of meeting our international obligations. So they're now forcing higher reporting of suspicious transactions. So for an example, when a client is buying a property, you know, let's say it's $1 million property, and they're not getting a mortgage, but 15 or 20 different deposits come into the lawyer's trust account from 15 or 20 different sources, that's suspicious. And a lawyer, the conveyancer, the real estate agent, if they know about this, from 1st of July this year, they're going to have to do a suspicious transaction report. Because it's just not right. It just doesn't seem right. It's a bit of a smell test, as they say.
Can I just ask you, though?
Yeah.
So I go out and buy $1 million property and you're acting for me and I say to you, I don't need any finance, but I don't pay dribs and drabs in, as you mentioned. I just pay $1 million into your trust account. Do you then have to try and find out how I got that million?
The professionals providing that service to you to do with the purchase of that property, they will need to ask these questions.
Will they?
They will. So, because if they don't, they could be fined. They could be in trouble with AUSTRAC, who wants to know what's going on. Where are these sources of money? Because the criminals will wash clean their proceeds of crime
through other
by buying a property.
Yep.
And for a lawyer to just sit there and go, oh, I've got, you know, this guy, you know, works on a low-paying job but has $1 million in my trust account.
Yep.
Where'd that come from?
Yeah. But, I mean, I could have sold another property, so all you've really got to do is ask that question.
That's right. It's follow the money, is trace the money, the source of that money, where did it come from? So, you know, some people have a number of properties, they collect rent every month, they've saved that money, and then they want to buy a property. Well, it'd be easy to show all of that's legitimately sourced income from rental income.
But the responsibility now is on the lawyer
The lawyer, the conveyancer, the accountant, the real estate agent. So these... And it's not because of their profession. It's the laws are targeted at services. So it's a particular kinds of service. What they've identified is even just buying what's called a shelf company.
Yep.
There are providers that will sell you a company off the shelf.
Yep.
They have to, if you go and buy 50 different companies within 1 week,
they've got no one.
That's suspicious.
Got to go, Con. Thanks for being in today. We look forward to talking to you next week. You'll come back and tell us about the bail situation and we'll talk to you same time in 1 month's time.
1 month's time. Great. Thanks, Alan. Always a pleasure to be here.